Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise of Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host and founder of the Rise of Justice Movement and the Rise of Justice Movement, the podcast. Today, I'll give a viewer discretion as advised due to the nature of the topics that we'll be discussing. Today, I am joined by Amanda Ross. Amanda, welcome to the Rise of Justice Movement podcast.
Hi.
I am so honored to sit down and talk with you and talk about the case of April Wilkins, which you are April's niece. And, feel free to introduce yourself to our audience and then walk us through the case of April Wilkins out of Oklahoma.
Yeah, so I'm Amanda. I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I have a majority of my life now lived in Oklahoma. And when I was 7, my aunt, April Wilkins, that's Wilkens, she shot and killed her abuser, and it wasn't seen as self-defense. And so I grew up knowing that she was incarcerated. But I also grew up in a really conservative household, who still to this day maybe struggles with understanding domestic violence and the role of women in society at large too, probably. My whole family grapples with that. I am more leftist, left-leaning, than my family. So I have gotten to experience a shift in how we talk about survivorship. When she was going through her trial, she used the battered women's syndrome defense, and that is like a dated term that courts today still use, though. But now the term is criminalized survivor that we're trying to move towards. And so in the past few years, we in Oklahoma were able to pass the Oklahoma Survivors Act. And so they used April's case as the main example for why we need this legislation. And the reason her story, I think, was able to reach the people it did so that they could use her story as an example was because of how we posted to social media about her story. That was also its own journey. But I help run the social media for the Free April Wilkins blog and Facebook, and we have an Instagram as well. So that's kind of my role in the overarching case of April. And did that answer that question? I'm sorry, I went on a tangent there.
No, feel free to go on tangents. And we actually welcome that on the podcast because we believe in the authentic voice and in the voices that mainstream media refuses to cover, or they undercover or just blatantly don't cover literally at all. Or if they do, it's very watered down, it's very edited, it's very, it's non-helpful essentially, because it waters down those voices of those who are deeply impacted by the justice system, and that is directly April. And April absolutely deserves to be free. In my professional and my personal opinion, I've been doing this work for a very long time. And this case, I felt the need to cover because it's not covered nearly enough. And not just this case, but there's a lot of other Aprils out there that are also incarcerated wrongfully. And she was just denied being released early, even while using this new law that was passed, the Oklahoma Survivors Act. Walk us through, a little bit about April's story. What led up to incarceration? What transpired?
So I was very young when it happened, and so as I've grown up and started helping her with like her 2022 parole attempt, I started to realize more and more what I didn't know and what had been misinterpreted. So I've grown to understand her case as it really was a self-defense case gone wrong. And in She started dating this man. He's a very he his name is Terry Carlton. I met him a few times as a child, at least once. That is like very vivid in my memory at Christmas time. And I remember being kind of afraid of him. I think he was probably drunk or high at the time. But he basically got April involved in drug usage and he was abusing her. And so he was stalking her, breaking into her house. There's so many news stories that cover it better than I could. But basically, he wouldn't stop harassing her and she couldn't get away from him. And so one night she goes over to his house and she's trying to plead with him and he handcuffs her at one point. And later she's able to get out of the cuffs by like really hurting her wrists. And this guy, he's the son of Don Carlton, and if you're from Tulsa, you know that name. They owned Acuras. I don't think they own Acura dealerships anymore, but now they're known as Don Carlton Honda. But that's where they met. But this guy had a ton of guns in his house. Like when the incident happened, in fact, the bomb squad had to be called in to his house. So he just was very big into gun culture. But basically, she used one of his guns to defend herself. And she spends a year in jail. And by that time, I think, like, when she's arrested, I'm about to turn 8, I want to say. And I remember writing to her in jail, in prison. I was always that weird little kid that loved to, like, have pen pals and stuff. So I would write to her. And, maintained that relationship as much as possible that way. And then to hear my parents talk about the case and recount it, like my mom attended almost every day of her trial, they could see that there was corruption even then, about how like the DA at the time was Tim Harris, the predecessor of the person now in office, who's Steve Koonsweiler. Where was I going with this? I lost my train of thought. Oh, my parents attended and they could tell how they were spinning things, and they weren't really after the truth, and so much evidence was also suppressed. And also, her jury was just so sexist at the time. It was almost a hung jury, is how I understand it. Like, they spent hours deliberating. And so, they eventually, even though they didn't get to see all of the evidence of abuse, which later came out, and which later I learned about, like helping her through her parole attempts, she. Oh, sorry, that jury, even though they didn't see all the evidence, they still gave her the possibility of parole. Yet there's nothing she can really do to attain parole. She's come up for parole several times now, and they look at her case, they see it's a violent offense. And in Oklahoma, it's multi stages. I think it's three stages where you submit your application, the parole board approves it to move forward or not, and then you get a parole hearing. And then even if they recommend it to you to get parole, the governor still has to sign off on it if you're a violent offense. So there's just so many hoops to jump through. Meanwhile, the crossbow killer in the same 2002 or 22, sorry, parole hearing that I first was helping April with, they vote to release the crossbow killer, and they don't even give April a go-ahead past stage one. Like, she doesn't even get a hearing when she has in the past. So it's just so arbitrary and ridiculous. And that's why we have an over-incarceration crisis, or one of the reasons why we have an over-incarceration crisis. So it to me, it just reads as really sexist. And in Oklahoma, and in the South in general, I feel like we over-punish women for not being these biblical ideals of what we think women should be, and so So me unlearning a lot of things growing up, it was very blatant to me that this was unfair. I didn't know what to do, so I was just complaining to anyone who would listen to me about April's case. And eventually, it falls into like April's story falls into the lap of Colleen McCarty at Oklahoma Appleseed, who is now representing April. But basically, they create this whole podcast about April's case. It's called Panic Button, the April Wilkins case. The first season is about her. And then from that narrative, there's like an interim study that happens at the Oklahoma Capitol. And Colleen has this idea about creating a bill like the DVSJA bill in New York. Like a version of that for Oklahoma. And so that comes into fruition. Our first two attempts don't succeed. And then we get to sneak language in on a third bill, essentially. And so that's how we were able to get it passed. And the DAs here fought it every step of the way. And the governor even vetoed the second version of the bill, which is how that died. So the DAs kind of got to our governor, Governor Kevin Stitt, at one point and made him think that it was like gonna release everyone. Everyone could just claim abuse or something. And it was just kind of ridiculous how they were able to spin the bill as a bad thing. So that's kind of been April's case's journey. And then in September of this year, she finally, after waiting a year after applying for resentencing under the OSA, like it goes into effect in like August of 24, 2024. And so she's waited a year. She's the first to apply, yet she doesn't get the first hearing. Lisa Moss does, now Lisa Wright. In Seminole County, but April's in Tulsa County, so it's a different DA, different court system, and they're just really dragging their feet in Tulsa. And so it just something wasn't right. At one point, she has a habeas hearing saying it's an unlawful like detention, I think, of her because like the DA keeps prolonging the process for her to get her OSA hearing. But she's denied habeas release. And then in September of this year, when she finally gets it, like over a year she's waited after applying under this new law, she's denied on the second day by Judge David Gutin. And it was really unexpected because I thought we were doing so well. We, as in her legal team that I'm not a part of, but I fully support. And it was just really heartbreaking to see a bill that was written with her in mind start to fail. Like only one person has gotten out under the OSA. And I don't think it's the bill failing. I think it's the judges interpreting the law incorrectly. Even some legislatures, I forget his name, I'd have to look it up. Someone in the legislature, I think he's a representative. I want to say his name is Danny, but don't quote me on that. He spoke out against these judges saying like, that is not the intent of our law. Like you're being too narrow with how you're interpreting this law of the abuse being a substantial contributing factor. It's like, that wasn't our intent. So he's spoken out. I can look him up, but I don't want to make you all hear the typing. But I was very grateful for that legislator speaking out. He is a Republican, and so it's like this is a bipartisan issue. We have people on both sides of the aisle speaking out. But
Yeah,
sorry.
I think this is one of those difficult cases and very complex case because there's so many moving parts of it. And it's definitely The evidence is there that April is not guilty. It's literally there, even by reason of self-defense. We know it's there. We all see it. Any of us who have been following this case, we know. We can see it. And you know what? What is the personality? Like, how is April, or how is April like handling everything right now? Like, what, you know, what's her personality like? Like, how is she, you know?
When she was denied, I don't think I had ever seen her like that before. She's usually very bubbly, always smiling. Like when I think of her, like historically from childhood to now, she's always laughing. And I went to visit her, I think that weekend after, like, we were sure she had been moved back from the jail to the prison. Mabel Bassett is where she's at now. But I had never seen her, so it was almost like she was speechless. Like, she didn't know what to even say. And so the quiet was like, we're always sending each other messages or she's calling, but she didn't. And I could just, it was a collective heartbreak for sure. But with her, I think now she's kind of, at one point afterwards, she's transitioned to like the angry stage, like, this isn't fair. Like, and it's like, yeah, we're there too, fighting for you. But it's a stage of grief, I guess. And I'm not sure where we're at right now because there's new news in her case. Like, her attorney's filed a motion for the judge to reconsider. And so it's not an appeal yet, because he hasn't issued his final written decision, I think is how to phrase that. So that he still can reconsider his decision. And you can read that on OSCN. But like the motion that they filed, so that's pending. And then there's been some other motions back and forth between her attorneys and the DAs. So sometimes there's like these glimpses of hope for all of us. And then for April though, she definitely keeps busy. She is always doing something. She started a physical health initiative at Mabel Bassett. They call it PHI, Physical Health Initiative, where they like do exercising together, and it's like a well-rounded nutritional program too. Like they're learning together, but she helps coach essentially in that program. And so she's very busy. She's also working on I want to I always get this wrong. I think it's like a master of divinity, but it's not that. Maybe it's like a master's of theology, I want to say. Like it's a written course. Like where she mails in her homework and stuff. So I'm amazed that they offer stuff like that. So the point being, she is always busy, always active, and I just wish she were out so that she could be doing so much more for society than what she can do locked up. Like it's just such a waste of a active and capable mind, in my opinion. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And what is the earliest memory you have with April that you can remember? Like, I know you said that you were 7 whenever she was incarcerated. And, you know, that's been over 20 plus years, right? It's like, what, 25 years,
I
give or
think
take, right?
27
Yeah.
is where we're at right now. So yeah.
What's your earliest memory that you have with April?
That's so hard to pin down because
Yes.
it I was actually just talking to someone who's doing a New York Times story on April, and she had asked me something similar. And I was like, well, as a kid, I would watch all of these home videos. So, like, my memories are really of me, like, at my first birthday party with April and my cousin Hunter, her son Hunter. And so it's like, I don't know if that's a memory or if I'm just remembering the video I watched, you know? So, but, But she was always there. I was obsessed with watching home videos as a kid, and so she was just like this ever constant piece of my life growing up too. But I did associate her with Hunter, my cousin. He's very close in age to me. I think I'm a year older, so he would come to visit us when we lived in Texas, and we would come up to Oklahoma where I now live. And so I always associated Aunt April with Hunter, but I think one of the earliest ones would be her visiting us in Texas. Maybe she had Hunter with her. I'm assuming so, but we were playing at like, you know, those play places where it's like a fake kitchen but kid-sized. And she was like playing with my hair, and we were cooking, you know. So stuff like that is what I remember. And it's just like these blurry flashes. But she was always like the cool aunt. She was much younger than my mother. She's my mother's half sister. So she just, you could tell like my mom had kind of been a mother figure at times in her life, and that's even how my mom would describe it, I think. Like, my mom often got mistaken for her mom, like if she was pushing her out in a stroller as they were growing up. So I've heard that story a couple times. And so her fashion sense was a bit different. I remember she one time she touched her eye, and it made it look like there were two irises. I had never even heard of contacts. Like, my parents did not wear contacts. And so I thought she was an alien, and I just like crawled out of my skin. I'm like, "What are you? Are you like an alien?" And she was just laughing. And so she was always very like technolo like I know glasses and contacts aren't tech savvy, but you know, like very forward-minded compared to what I was exposed to growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, thank you for sharing that, because I know that oftentimes whenever I ask that question, it leads to a whole world of like emotions, right? Because it's like that before incarceration, or the before the trauma, or before, you know, anything kind of happens. So thank you for sharing that. And I love hearing about, you know, her personality, and she seems very bubbly and very outgoing, just a leader. You know, like even like being incarcerated, she's still leading. You know, she's teaching people like life skills, right? And it's so, that is so incredibly inspiring to me. And yeah, your aunt sounds like somebody that I would have been friends with. You know, like she sounds like that type of person, and she sounds like she loves everybody, you know.
Before she was incarcerated too, it kind of leads into the contacts thing. I think it's called orthotics, but she like would fit people for prosthetic limbs, and she had her own business doing that. And like it was, she had like a master's equivalent in order to practice that. And so she has a heart for helping people too. And I, as a young kid, I don't know that I made that connection, but like it makes sense, like why she would be willing to wear contacts, you know. So I don't know when contacts were actually introduced into the world, but she was just very forward thinking to me, and that just shows.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, there's, like you said, there's been a lot of media around April's case. There's been a lot of interviews, there's been a lot of media around it. There's just so much going into this. Now, working with Oklahoma Appleseed, you know, Appleseed does incredible work like all across the country. We have a Kansas Appleseed, and I talked to people from Kansas Appleseed, but also the Missouri Appleseed, and like some of the other states that have an Appleseed, which I think is in practically all the states or some form of it. What's been your experience working with Kansas Appleseed? What are, you know, what's your read on what they're watching and what they're seeing?
So with Oklahoma Appleseed, Colleen was just starting out. She's the, I want to say she's the CEO of it. I think that's her title, but she, Colleen McCarty was wanting to start the Oklahoma chapter and was kind of looking for cases to take on, or like causes to support. And so, basically, I had complained to my friend Ashlyn Faulkner. Ashlyn was a friend who grew up with me. She knew I had an aunt who was incarcerated, and then she really took an interest in April's story when she read. I think the first thing she read of April's was the commutation application that we had that I had posted online at one point. It's still online too. It's like the best thing in April's own words that you can read, like when we were first starting, or when she was first starting out, and we just wanted to post that in case, you know, it spoke to the hearts of anyone. But it was in her own words, and so Ashlyn Faulkner really took interest in April's case, and she had an attorney friend, Leslie Briggs, and Leslie was kind of giving us some like perspective on how and where we could take it. At one point, I'm pretty sure Leslie is why we got connected with Project Commutation. And so April did have an attorney on her 2022 parole attempt because of that, but it still was not fruitful. So these conversations just spurred into other conversations and ideas. And then Colleen was looking for, like I said, causes to support, and Leslie took that to Colleen, and then there was a meeting with all of us, and it just turned into like I had never in my wildest dreams considered a bill, and nor would I have had the means to advocate for that. So Oklahoma, all the Appleseed networks who do this work, I am just in awe of what they can accomplish and the connections that they're making, because like to me, I never connected the dots between like the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board. Their decisions are so arbitrary and it's unfair. I don't know how to change that to, well, why don't we just like bypass that process altogether? And so they're bringing the Appleseed Network seems to be bringing in these minds and these new ideas to tackle these problems in these states that, you know, I was even feeling stuck. It's like, I don't know what to do. I'm just kind of like flailing over here for April. Like, look at this. This isn't right, right? Like, I don't even know how to talk about this. Like, at the time, I didn't even know the term criminalized survivor. And so language really does matter in ha like the evolution of language and how we talk about things. Like the Me Too movement happened in between point A and B of April's case as well. So it we need these organizations like the Appleseed Networks to keep doing what they're doing, because culturally, the laws need to catch up with how we were talking about things culturally and thinking about things culturally too. So I'm just so grateful. And it was very just lucky that the case, even like April's story, even got in front of Colleen. So I'm just grateful.
You're right. And I think, Appleseed does, like I said, they do some incredible work. So anybody out there who is listening, be sure to connect with like your local Appleseed, your state Appleseed organization, because they're doing some incredible work for like criminal justice reform, but also like children's welfare reform. And like they do some very deeply impactful work and different ways for people to plug into that work.
Yeah.
And whenever we think of justice, right, we automatically think criminal justice, but it goes beyond that, right? It goes deeper than that. So what do you think justice would be in the case of April Wilkins? Obviously for her to be free, but what else do you think justice looks like? And what would that look like in this specific case?
Oh, I'm still very bitter about the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board. She should have gotten out a long time ago. Like, even if, and that's not justice. That's not even what you're asking technically, but it's like, if the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board can't even function as the release valve it's meant to in a case where, even her jury wanted her to be able to make parole, yet there is nothing she can do to get that. It just doesn't, the system doesn't make sense. So true justice would be overhauling that system, but at the same time, she should never have been convicted. True justice would have been these DAs, Tim Harris specifically, should not have been able to suppress the evidence of abuse from April's jury. I will say that some of her jury members seemed a bit sexist. Like, from what I've heard, like, one person didn't like that she was this really educated woman. And so he just wouldn't bend to towards a non-conviction. But I where was I going with this? I think true justice would have been the police like arresting Terry when he had warrants out for his arrest and he showed up at her house with a loaded gun and they still didn't arrest him, stuff like that. It's as deep as the police in Tulsa. And even now we have one of the same officers who did her wrong, testifying at her resentencing hearing under the Oklahoma Survivors Act, and still he's not able to do the right thing. I like we have evidence of hi contradictory statements from him and another officer. She testified at April's trial, but April's attorney didn't even know, like he didn't do enough research to know she had perjured herself in another court proceeding. So it just goes very deep where the whole system just there's too many opportunities for things to go wrong. And I don't know that I have all the answers, but I'm pointing out what true justice would have been had things gone right. Does
Oh,
that answer?
it does. It does answer it. And also Oklahoma, and it's also this is another thing worth noting. Oklahoma had the highest incarceration rate in the entire United States out of all 50 states at the end of 2016. But recent reforms have reduced the prison population by over 20% and the women's prison population by 30%. Despite the progress, Oklahoma remains third in overall imprisonment rates as of when this article came out, which would have been November of 2022, from Turning the Page, which is Oklahoma's criminal justice reform story. And reliance on punitive measures rather than supportive policies, the report Turning the Page examines the impacts of reforms and the ongoing issues within the child abuse and neglect statute as well. And it kind of talks about all of that. And Oklahoma has the second highest rate of women's imprisonment in the US, with a 30% decline since 2016. Now, I wonder what it looks like now that it's 2025, because this report is based on 3 years. So I'm wondering, what it's going to look like in the next 3 years, where we continue this mass imprisonment and this mass incarceration for survivors for self-defense. You know, like I said, there's other Aprils, not just April, but there's other cases that are absolutely horrific. And these systems are not just broken. These are exactly how they are built. They were built to do harm to survivor voices. And that is the actual truth behind it. Now, whatever we think of, we kind of talked a little bit about justice. We talked a little bit about, what led up to April's incarceration. And I know you've spent a lot of time with April, visiting her, everything like that. And when's the last time you talked to April?
This weekend, she called me and we talked a little bit about the motion that was just filed to disqualify Kunzweiler, the district attorney, and his entire office. Like, I think they're also requesting a change of venue. But the file is not, I don't think it's posted to OSCN because there's like probably personal information in there. And we don't have to get into all of that. But so that's what we talked about. But she calls me almost every week. Typically, she does call me every weekend, but sometimes I can't pick up. Like maybe I'm driving when she calls me, stuff like that. But we are constantly sending each other messages. Like they have issued tablets at Mabel Bassett where they can receive, it's basically like emails, and they can also text people. If you set that up, it's kind of like a live chat system too, but it costs a bit more money. So we do have great communication with our loved ones now, but still, it is about, oh, I forget how long of a drive it is. I think it's like an hour and a half drive, depending on if you take the toll roads to get to Mabel Bassett from Tulsa. It's in McLeod, Oklahoma. So that our relationship really is strained. And I know the effect it has on families is quite obvious. Like her son, who's my age, he doesn't go and visit her because it's such an ordeal. Like you have to be wearing the right color of clothes. You can't bring in anything but a key, and you have to bring quarters if you want to be able to eat something. And it's a lot. She also has a granddaughter she has never met because they don't want to expose her to the prison system. And so, at least that's my understanding. Her name's Scarlett, and they've talked on the phone though. So, it's heartbreaking that it's been 27 years. Like I'm 35 now. So when I was 7, I don't think anyone thought she would be incarcerated this long. Like, first of all, I don't think people thought she'd get a they'd convict her, you know. Like she was like, I think she asked like, well, when can I go home to the police, and when she was arrested. So it's I think we're all in denial still that she was even rejected under the OSA. Like it's just time and time again, all of these avenues for relief, for correcting the injustice, these systems get to weasel out of true justice, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a article that came off on Public Radio Tulsa, which would have been September 5th of 2025. In this article, it states that the taxpayer caused Kunzweiler and Assistant District Attorney Megan Kilbourn presented expert testimony from Dr. Jared Stefan, which is at, or Stefan, which is actually out of Wichita. He's a Wichita, Kansas-based forensic psychologist. According to court testimony, the district attorney's office paid Stefan or Stefan, however the hell you say his name, more than $11,000 for an evaluation report of Wilkins in court testimony. The psychologist told the court that while he was hired by the Tulsa County DA, his assessments are impartial and sometimes contradict the arguments of the party that retains him. Kunzweiler said the case came with significant costs for the district attorney's office, and he stated it became very expensive. It became a very expensive proposition. I had to hire at the last moment after a good long year worth of litigation an expert from another jurisdiction. He also criticized the Oklahoma Survivors Act for lacking funding to support prosecution efforts. Well, yeah, it's obviously going to cost a lot whenever you won't listen to the damn survivor and you won't listen to the actual evidence in this case. This is more than just a system flaw. This is a vendetta against survivors directly. And this does not reflect you, Amanda. This is my personal thought and my personal opinion on these stories that I hear about. It's just beyond disturbing, right? Like, it's just beyond disturbing about how these systems are towards survivor voices. And now April is going to continue serving a life sentence for killing her abuser. Let that sink in for a second. How many other times have we heard about stories like April's? How many other stories are we going to allow to continue not being told? How many other people are going through this right now? Obviously the underreporting of this is so astronomically barbaric. It's just, oh God, I can go on a whole tangent about this because this case just pisses me off. To be fully like transparent, it really does piss me off, and it's so beyond fucked up.
Yeah,
I
I'm right
just
there with you.
now there was I don't know. I think about this case, and the more I think about it, the more pissed off I get because it is so deeply devastating that in 2025, survivors are still having to fight for their right to be heard and their right to be in court and their right. And even if they do go to court, look what happens. They are not believed, they are not heard, and they are not seen because the system works against them and doesn't believe them. Now, I believe April. I unite behind April. I'm in full support of, uplifting April's story on our platform of over 230,000 followers across social media, but not just there, but also just, word of mouth and continue spreading the word about April's case. And I, to say that I'm disappointed is an understatement, but I can't find any other words to describe how I would act. I mean, I do know how I actually feel about this. But if I did, I wouldn't have a social media channel and I wouldn't have a podcast if I actually explained exactly what I actually felt about this. And I would probably have some people knocking on my door. But she's 55 years old now, right?
I believe so, yes.
And she was granted the right to resentencing hearing last year under the Oklahoma Survivors Act, which you stated. And I know that you've also connected with some other survivors and other stories. What are some of those other stories that you also think that needs to be amplified? What else are you hearing from the community? And what's also been the community's response to April not being granted this resentencing and, continuously being incarcerated? What are you hearing from the community, and what are other survivor stories that you'd like to amplify as well?
I'm so glad you asked that. Like, they're from the survivor community. Like, I'm part of the Oklahoma Survivor Justice Coalition, which Oklahoma Appleseed is part of, and the ACLU is part of, and DVIS, Domestic Violence Intervention Services in Tulsa. That's like one of the largest Oklahoma organizations for domestic violence prevention, and they also like are a shelter as well. They have all rallied behind April. Divis even called for us to essentially vote out Judge David Gutin and DA Steve Kunzweiler, and I was just so grateful for that. But I think there's also just, we're in Oklahoma, there's a misunderstanding like of how the DA can spin. He's been going on like interview talk show like news interviews and saying like, I support the Oklahoma Survivors Act, but they did not meet their burden of proof. And it's like, you chose to fight against April's case. Even Judge Gutin said that you were under no mandate to hire an expert witness because the burden of proof was on April's team, right? And so him spending $11,000 plus on her case alone to keep her incarcerated, that's taxpayer money. I think that alone should make people a bit skeptical of him asking for more money. Like, why does he think the legislature should have funded him fighting these cases more? It just makes no sense when even Judge Gutin is like, you didn't have to call any witnesses. You didn't even have to do anything because the burden is on them to prove that the abuse happened. So by them hiring their forensic psychologist, we had a forensic psychiatrist who's like able to prescribe medicine. She tore Dr. Jared Steffen's report apart. Like, Steffen did not diagnose April with anything. But in the motion that they filed for Gutin to reconsider, apparently she wasn't able to testify on her own report or something. So she didn't get to testify. And I'm not sure of the whole background there, but it's just the fact the DA is willing to fight these cases. Like, even if you think April did something wrong, is 27 years not enough? And he even brings up the ability for her to still get parole. Like, when the judge's decision came out and he was talking with the media, my family and my friends lingered there to listen to what he was telling the media, and his full interview is online as well. But it's just he's saying she can still make parole. It's like, no, she can't. She's gonna die in prison, which is why we needed this bill in the first place. So the community, I think, is starting to see, but I think we've got a long way to go. And I just wish that they wouldn't be so willing to believe these DAs, because they are in it for the wins, and they are willing to do and spend however much money it takes to keep those wins. They don't care about truth. So the community response, I for those who understand survivorship, I'm just like, yes, you get it. I'm so grateful for you. But I think we all thought that we wouldn't be here still having to advocate for April. But the other women in Tulsa and in Oklahoma City, they have also been denied. There's only been one person released. Her name was Lisa Moss, like I said earlier. And that it just kind of feels like after she was released, these DAs got together and they conspired for how they're actually going to fight these cases harder, because they don't want people released. So in Tulsa, there's been Erica Harrison. Her judge was Sharon Holmes, and then there was Norma June or Jane Lumpkin, and they were both denied. And then in Oklahoma City, it was Taisha Long, who was also denied, and her judge was Judge Stallings, I think Susan Stallings. But the other two in Tulsa were but from Judge Sharon Holmes, who she's had a lot of controversies too, like in the news. If you Google her name comes up with some interesting issues. Let's just say that. But so we were very disappointed, and I attended all the hearings for those, and so did Lisa Moss, the first woman released under the OSA retroactively. With the OSA, there's a retroactive portion to the bill and a current sentencing. So, like, those who haven't already been sentenced but are about to be, like, those sentencing ranges can apply there. So we fought really hard to keep the retroactive portion, because when we were trying, those who like really worked on the bill fought so hard to keep the retroactive portion, because there was a lot of pushback from the DAs saying that they didn't want it to be retroactive, so it wouldn't have affected women like April in the first place. That's how much they want to keep people in prison. It's ridiculous. Where was I going with this? Oh, I attended the hearings of every single one of these women, although Taisha Long, and Norma June Lumpkins, like with Taisha Long, hers was 2 days, and then the judge didn't issue her decision until like a month later. And the same thing happened with Lumpkin's case. She, although it was only a day long, so I wasn't able to go to Oklahoma City for Taisha Long's hearing for both days, but I was there for the first one. It was so long and so brutal to see Taisha Long took the stand, and it just re-traumatizes victims. It was turning into a retrial almost. And so I'm grateful that when April finally got her hearing later, we were still waiting for the decision in Taisha's case. But I'm grateful that April didn't take the stand. Like what her attorney said was, her testimony from her trial hasn't changed, you know, it still stands, so she's not going to take the stand. Because the questions they were asking them were so disturbing. It's like, why they kept trying to like have gotcha moments where they were like trying to perjure essentially Taisha Long. And so Norma J June Lumpkin, who goes by Jane, but if you like look her up on OSC, and I think it's Norma June, sorry. She didn't take the stand either. And she is so elderly that you just know how long she's been incarcerated, and it just breaks your heart. Because you know she killed her abuser as well. And so sitting through these, it has been a really big eye-opening experience for how the court system works as well. And I encourage people to go and attend some court proceedings because it'll be eye-opening. On one of the hearings, let me think, I think it was Erica Harrison's, hers was the first one to come up in Tulsa. The judge didn't even realize that she was on the docket. Like, so she had to push back Erica's hearing. So I'm just glad I took off the whole day, but that's just how court goes. Anything could happen and you got to be prepared. So I can't imagine having to hire an attorney for this process too. So I'm really grateful that there's Oklahoma Appleseed and Project Commutation are taking these first cases, because the process has been over a year from application to now to this denial, and it's still continuing. And we also just learned that the appeals process, or no, sorry, not the appeals process, the indigent system will not appoint them attorneys to go through this process either, which also is against the intent of the bill, as I understand it. Like, I read versions of this bill, and I didn't even realize how, like, I don't think I realized what I was reading. Like, I don't think I even understood the term hearing. Like, what does a hearing mean? I think even judges interpret that differently. So it's just been eye-opening, and I think I wish the community and society at large would realize that a lot needs to change. And to really comb through the legalese that these DAs are telling the media, you cannot just believe them. When Kunzweiler says he supports the Oklahoma Survivors Act, his actions speak louder than his words. Sorry, I went on for a long time there.
No, you're completely fine. I appreciate you, one, for continuing to uplift April's voice and fight for justice, whatever that may be, whatever that may look like, because it looks different for each person, right? And what we may think is justice, April may think it's something different. You know what I mean? So I think just, given that broad overview of that, I think it just paints a picture like how April would actually feel about what justice would look like. And she may not actually know the answer to that because it's just so complex. Thank you for also highlighting the other stories. Now, how can people follow April's case on social media or any websites, anything like that?
Yeah, so there's an Instagram and a Facebook called Free April Wilkins. Again, that's ENS, not INS. And then there's also the Free April Wilkins blog, and on it is a timeline where I've hyperlinked like all this documentation, and like I rely on the timeline as well, but it's been a collaborative effort to put together. But like if you want to know specific dates of like when events occurred between like her relationship with Terry and like how the trial sentencing process happened, and then all the way up to today where we're at, there's important dates to note there and hyperlinked documentation to kind of illustrate what we're talking about. So I would check those out specifically, and you can also subscribe to the blog for email updates. So, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Amanda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, and I greatly appreciate your energy and ensuring that your net story really does get out there. I greatly appreciate you. And obviously you have an open invite. Anytime there's any updates, feel free to update us and we'll bring you back on, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking an interest and doing what you do as well. You can feel so alone when you do this kind of work, and just knowing that you exist and you care, that's so comforting. So thanks.
Absolutely. Take it easy, okay?
You too.
Great.
Bye.
Thank you.